Good morning, everyone. I'm Holly Barreto, and I'm the chair of the Adult Education Committee, and I'm delighted to see all of you here today to welcome our longtime adult ed participant, Keith Mertz. Keith is going to be continuing our series, our lay-led series on parables, and Keith today is going to be talking about the parable of the sower. So a brief introduction to Keith, who I don't feel like needs much introduction, but I will do it. He has been a Nassau Presbyterian member since 2000. He sings bass in the choir and is currently on session. He's led small groups and been involved in other activities. Keith grew up at First Memorial Presbyterian in Dover, New Jersey. He's the son of elders, deacons, the church secretary, Sunday school teachers, the youth ed director, counters, communion preparers, scout leaders, cooks, snow shovelers, and table and chair arrangers. Keith clearly comes from a tradition of faithful service to the church. So we're delighted to have Keith here. I will start us in prayer, and then Keith will take over. Please join me. Gracious God, thank you for bringing us all here today. Thank you for this opportunity to learn more about you and what you desire for us in the world. Thank you for Keith, for his gifts, for the time he's given to preparing for today, for his dedication to our community. Open our ears and our hearts to your word today. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Thank you, Keith.
Oh, my. Well, thank you. I hope more than anything else this is about us. That's what I want it to be about us. But there's going to be a lot of, a little bit of autobiographical information here, so I'll start off with that. I'm writing with an invitation to teach an adult education class at Nassau during the season of Lent. For 6 Sundays leading up to Easter, our theme will be parables. The Adult Education Committee would love for you to be one of our leaders. So as soon as I got this invitation, I said, oh boy. But I knew I wanted to do it, and so I had to think about that and what parable to choose. So I quickly settled on this parable of the sower because it has so much opportunity. There's a lot of characters in it, there's a lot of things going on, there's a lot of lessons that we can draw, there's a lot of questions that we can find. In fact, that's probably my downfall here because I had to cut it to 45 minutes and I had to cut the number of things that I could talk about. So in the end, I'm going to probably leave some questions here that I'm not going to answer, but I'm going to let them be questions that you can answer perhaps for yourselves. An earthly story with a heavenly meaning. An earthly story with a heavenly meaning. An earthly story with a heavenly meaning. This phrase is going through my head as I'm deciding. What parable am I choosing? What am I doing here? Where did I get that phrase from? I probably heard it 100 times, 1,000 times. You've probably heard it. And I said to myself, well, when did I first hear this song, this phrase? And then I said, Mrs. Ramsey. When I was growing up in the Presbyterian Church in Dover, there was a very structured Christian education program, probably akin to some of yours if you grew up in a Presbyterian church in the 60s. And so 7th and 8th grade were basically structured as a confirmation class. So your Sunday school and your Wednesday afternoon was a confirmation class. And in 7th grade, the confirmation class was taught by Mrs. Ramsey, and Mrs. Ramsey taught the parables of Jesus. Now, I'm a hoarder, so I knew that I could go to my bookshelf in the living room where all my Bible books are kept, and I could find the book that Mrs. Ramsey gave me called The Parables of Jesus. And I said to myself, this is where I'm going to go. And I could find the notebook from that class, and I'm going to use this because it'll at least be cute. So I went to the bookshelf, and lo and behold, there was the book I thought was called The Parable of Jesus, but it was called The Words of Jesus. And just to prove to you, it's The Words of Jesus. And I opened it up, and it says, from Bernice Smith. ...1965. It's the right book. It's the right date. It's the right class. But Mrs. Ramsey retired just before my seventh grade, and Mrs. Smith took over the class. And so this is the way our minds work sometimes. We remember more about the anticipation of the event than we remember about the event itself. I mean, I totally forgot that. I was so freaked out. Why was I freaked out about it? Why did I focus on Mrs. Ramsey? Mrs. Ramsey was an older woman who was very stern-looking. She had been widowed just briefly before, and she wore black and her gray hair in a bun. And it was rumored by the class ahead of me, the people who were 1 year older than me, that this was a tough class. And what does it mean to be a tough class? This is just a Sunday school class. What does it mean? Is there like some report going out? Are they gonna tell Dr. Miller that I shouldn't be confirmed because I didn't pay attention? Or I don't know what that was about. But in any event, this class was a coming of age, and the notebook did me no good. So I have nothing to share with you other than my memories of that. So the next thing I thought about was maybe I could get influenced by some art. But first of all, I want to make some comments about this list here. This list was given to me by Joe Jackson, who happens to be one of our Friday morning men's breakfast discussion group, small group participants, and he created this list for us. And at some point in time, I decided that this parable was, and it's kind of rumored to be the first parables. And you can see that maybe that's not the first parables, but in Matthew, these parables are the first ones that are called parables. In other words, right, the context of these two stories is Jesus has given the Sermon on the Mount, he's gone about preaching, he has healed people, he's gone to dinners, he's woed the Pharisees a few times, and he has now gone to a hillside and sat down to teach the people in parables. And so these are the first two parables that are called parables in Matthew. And you can see that this book tells you that they're also in Luke, and the sower in the soils is also in Mark. And at some point, they ask him, why are you teaching in parables? And so, just for a little bit of reference, this is the explanation in my book called The Words of Jesus. This is how it's written. Because it is given unto you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it is not given. For whoever hath, to him shall be given, and he shall have more abundance. But whoever hath not, from him shall be taken away, even that he hath. Therefore speak I to them in parables, because they, seeing not, see not. And they, hearing, hear not. Neither do they understand, and in them is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah, which saith, by hearing ye shall hear, and shall not understand, and seeing ye shall see, and not perceive. For this people's heart is waxed gross, and their ears are dull of hearing, and their eyes they have been closed, lest at any time they should see with their eyes, and hear with their ears, and should understand with their heart, and should be converted, and on. I had two reactions to reading this. The first was, Jesus, if you're talking to the people like this, I don't think you need parables. And the second was, here I am in seventh grade, and I didn't realize it, but I had already learned a second language called King Jamesian. Pretty thick. I'm not sure how in seventh grade I understood what was going on there. But I think we all had that issue. So I looked for a second inspiration, and the second inspiration I looked for was art. And I said, well, there's probably some art. Maybe I can teach something about the parable of the sower with art. There's a lot of artwork, parable of the sower, and I've incorporated here on my cover sheet. But I didn't find anything that was particularly inspirational for me. It's all beautiful art. This picture here, I think if you look up Art of the Parable of the Sower, this is by a Dutch painter and seems to be the most famous one. I think the first 42 internet calls on Google were about that painting and no other painting. But I found others. And so there's a lot of art about this parable. But it didn't particularly inspire me. So I could have gone to the internet. I could have found 100 books that Dale Allison categorized for us in the first session. I didn't have the advantage of being preached the parables Sunday after Sunday, as Bill did. And maybe if I had all that, I would have less questions and more answers. But I decided that that wasn't the assignment. The assignment was to share my ideas. And so I'm going to throw some questions and some dispersions on these parables. And I'm going to ask you to maybe share some of yours. But let's read the parables, because I think these parables are kind of cut and dry. You know, the difficulty with these parables for me is they ask Jesus for an explanation and he gives it. So there's two parables. They're about sowing fields of wheat. And they ask Jesus for the explanation and he gives it to them. So I'm not really sure, I wasn't really sure what can we talk about here. But let's go ahead and find out. So the parable of the sower. That same day, Jesus went out of the house and he sat beside the sea, and great crowds gathered around him. So he got in a boat and he sat there, and the whole crowd stood on the beach. And he told them many things in parables, saying, a sower went out to sow, and as he sowed, some seeds fell on the path, and the birds came and devoured them. Other seeds fell into rocky ground where they had not much soil, and immediately they sprang up since they had no depth of soil. But when the sun rose, they were scorched, and since they had no root, they withered away. Other seeds fell on the thorns, among the thorns, and the thorns grew up and they choked them. And other seeds fell on good soil and brought forth grain, some 100-fold, some 60, some 30. And the second parable. Weeds on the wheat, weeds among the wheat. Another parable he put before them, saying, the kingdom of heaven may be compared to a man who sowed good seed in his field, but while men were sleeping, his enemy came and sowed weeds among the wheat, and they went away. And so when the plants came up and they bore grain, the weeds appeared also. And the servants of the householder came and said to him, sir, did you not sow good seed in your field? How then has it weeds? And he said, an enemy has done this. The servant said to him, do you want us to go and pull up the weeds? And he said, no. If you gather the weeds, you will uproot the wheat along with the weeds. Let them grow together until the harvest, and at the harvest time, we'll tell the reapers to gather the weeds first and bind them in bundles to be burned and put the wheat in the barn. All right. Seems pretty clear. How many people know these parables? Just, right? How many people have seen themselves in these parables? Me too. Right? So now we see what the gospel writers tell us are Jesus' explanation. So the parable of the sower. When anyone hears the word of the kingdom and doesn't understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what is sown in his heart. And this is what was sown on the path. So the birds came, ate the seed off the path. on the rocky ground, this is the one who hears the word and immediately receives it with joy, and he has no root in himself, but endures for a while, and when tribulation or persecution arises, he immediately falls away. And the seed sown among the thorns, this is he who hears the word, but the cares of the world and the delight in riches choke the word and proves it unfruitful. And as for what is sown on good soil, this is he who hears the word and understands it. He indeed bears fruit and yields in one case. In any case, he yields a lot more than the single seed that was originally planted. This is a little confusing for me because I'm not sure what the seed is. Is the seed the word or is the seed me? I mean, after all, I want to be the seed in good soil because I want to be fruitful. That seems to be the point of all of this. In the next one, Jesus explains the parable of the weeds. He who sows the good seed is the Son of Man. In the field, the world is the field, and the good seed is the sons of the kingdom. The weeds are the sons of the evil one, and the enemy who sowed them is the devil. Just as the weeds are gathered and burned in the fire, so it will be at the close of the age. The Son of Man will send the angels, gather the weeds and burn them and gather the harvest and bring it to the kingdom. I sort of put some points here between the two parables. In the parable of the sower, it seems starts out with the seed is the word of the kingdom, but then it kind of leads you to think maybe the seed is the believer, is the person. It's not clear, but you know, as we move through this, it's sort of maybe our hearts are the seed, maybe our hearts are the soil, maybe our hearts are the soil inside this. It's a little bit mind-boggling. Clearly, the birds are the evil ones. We're the soils. So the seeds are thrown on the pathway, and our hearts are hard, and the birds take it away. The seeds are sown on the rocky ground, and our hearts are hard, not quite as hard as the pathway, but not conducive to growth. Thorny ground, and you can see I missed a return here. And then finally, good soil. So thorny ground, choked out by the weeds around us, the cares of the world. And the sower is presumed to be God. It doesn't say that the sower is God. It's kind of presumed, kind of built in there. Now we look at the weeds among the wheat. It's straight out, the sower is the Son of Man. So the sower, Son of Man, Jesus Christ. The field is the world. Good seeds are people. Weed seeds are people. The good seed is infiltrated by the bad seed. The wheat and the weeds are allowed to grow together. The weeds are weeded out at the harvest. The wheat is harvested. In some sense, this one seems to me to be a little more realistic because the weeds and the wheat grow together. That just seems to be more like my experience of the world. So looking through the art, I found this piece of art. It's a wonderful piece of art. Kind of gives you the hearts, right? Right there, the defiance, the rejection, the hard heart. It's pretty clear. The heart of the rocky ground, a little shame, a little sorrow, lost faith. And then doubt and confusion, lost enthusiasm. In the thorns, and joy, assimilation, cultivation. So, how do we see ourselves in these parables? Because I think the beauty of the parables now, as we look at them, is to not just focus on what the gospel writer tells us Jesus explained, but to say, how do we see ourselves? So, I mean, right? The obvious thing is we're supposed to see ourselves as the seeds in the good soil. Does anyone see themselves as a bad seed? Anyone here a weed? We're willing to admit it. Does everyone think they're growing in good? Well, let me ask the question a different way. Who thinks they're growing into rocks? Who thinks they're growing into thorns? Good soil? A lot of not sure. Would you repeat that?
I'd say sometimes to all of them.
So sometimes to all of them. How many people agree with Winnell's opinion?
If you go back to those pictures, you can say, how often do you feel like this person or this person or this person?
Yeah.
This picture, you mean?
It looks like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. We won't, there's no picture of Friday and Saturday here. And maybe Thursday and Sunday are the same, huh? Okay. Yeah, right? That's reality, right? When we look at this. So how many people here garden? Right? So this story isn't about gardening. This story is about farming. Growing a wheat field is not like growing tomatoes in your garden. It's more like growing a lawn. So if you've ever planted a lawn, you know that there's a period of time after you plant the seed that you just don't want to walk there, right? Because as someone pointed out in my group, if you go in to pull the weeds after you've planted, and it's too soon, you're going to trample on the new grass, the new wheat. And so not only might you pull up some of that wheat with the weeds, because the weeds, after a few days, are entangled in the roots of the grass. Not only that, but you're also going to tramp on it. So it makes sense that the farmer in the second parable wouldn't want the tenders to go in and pull up the weeds right away. So it makes sense that the weeds and the wheat are going to grow together. Go back to this. How many people see themselves as the soil? Anyone? Soil? No? Yeah. So, rocky soil? No? Some? This is going to turn out to be some of all again. Thorny soil? Okay. Good soil? Well, I have to say, if I wanted to see myself as the soil, honestly, I'd have to say I was pretty good soil. I was planted in pretty good soil. I mean, you know, look around you. The challenges here are real, but there's a whole lot of the world that has a lot more rocky, thorny soil to deal with than I do. A lot. So I may see myself as in that thorny soil or amongst the thorns, amongst the rocks. But I have to admit, for me, certainly hasn't been as rocky and as thorny as it has been for some folks. Has anyone, again, show of hands, ever seen themselves as a sower? There we go. So as the sower in this story, in either of these stories?
Not as God.
Okay, but as a sower, How did you see yourself as the sower in this parable? Please. Hold on, hold on. Here we go.
I guess I relate to it because I was a teacher for many years, and I was sowing lots of seeds to students, and the question was, how much of it was landing on the, you know, who was the rocky soil, who was the good soil, who was, you know, all the students represent, to me, it's like a metaphor for what was happening, you know, with the different kinds of soils. You know, you wind up with some kids who are really at the top of their game and the top of the class. Others struggle. Some fall by the wayside. You know, you see the whole gamut.
Have you ever been surprised?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yes.
By the failure of the top of the class guy or by the success of the guy who was maybe not, or the woman who was maybe not paying attention?
Absolutely. Well, it's wonderful to watch those seeds come to life, you know, come to full bloom, so to speak. And your goal as a my goal as a teacher was to make sure that they were doing that.
Thank you. Yeah. There's someone else?
I wanted to answer your...
Yes?
I wanted to answer your question. When do I think of myself as the sower? Well, sometimes I kind of want to manage for production. That is, I want to get the most out of it, and I'll throw money and resources and time at the project. It's going to go everywhere, and maybe here and there it'll produce what I want. Sometimes I want to manage for efficiency. I don't have that many resources, so I'm going to seek out the good soil and just put the seed there. It's a question of managing for production or managing for efficiency. So I think in all cases, we are sometimes both.
Thank you. That's kind of a great lead into the next slide. So one thing is we can't see this parable as an everything parable. In other words, it doesn't have the answer to everything. In fact, if we dig into, for me, when I dig into this parable, I have more questions than answers. I think I have to focus on what is the narrow aspect of this? Why is Jesus telling this story? And I think for me, at the end of the day, I came to the conclusion that Jesus tells this story because he wants us to not be thorns. He wants us to not be thorns, to not fight against the kingdom, not fight against the word, to just... He's pretty much saying, look, these people who fight against the word, they're the ones that aren't going to obtain God's grace. Just, that's how it is. I think I didn't ask one of these questions. Right. I want to go back to this one. So why can this parable be dangerous? Anyone? Why can it be dangerous?
There's always the temptation for self-righteousness and being the good soil. And I'm not sure that the self-assessment at the deepest level can be had without getting into the spin. So
let me just try to summarize that. So it tempts us to judgment, to self-righteousness. But it tempts us. Whoa, hold on now. If you're going to go on, we need the mic on you.
In this one, the emphasis is on hearing, which is interesting, because something that is spoken, you hear it and it's gone unless you capture it somehow. So sometimes we can't help ourselves because our memories aren't as good, or, you know, if it's a response we need through hearing, you have to capture it to absorb it, at least I do, in some format. So that I think is, it's again, grace is needed for hearing to be planted in the deepest way.
I think that's great. Go ahead. Wait, Mark.
Also,
closer to your mouth.
I find this issue about being a teacher and who you're sowing to or who those people are, the seeds are. I think of myself in high school. I flunked out of high school. I was a horrible student in high school, and I was near the top of my class in college. And so what about people that convert on their deathbed? Are they equally as righteous?
Good question.
Is it the acts or the faith or the grace or?
Good question. That's a great question. That's a great question. We're going to get to that in questions. Back to my questions. So, first of all, I have questions about the sower. The seed has value. If we think about the seed as the Word of God, well, Jesus is the Word of God. There's a whole lot of value there, right? Why throw it around? Why are we wasting the seed on the pathway? Why are we wasting the seed on the rocky ground, in the thorns? I mean, it's, you know, as Dave suggests, maybe it's just efficiency. Just get the seed out there. Get it out there. Maybe there's a hope that some of it will grow. Maybe there's a hope that some of it will grow. If we are the soils, it doesn't tell us much about how we got there, how we got hard, how we got rocky. It doesn't say much about that. It seems to be sort of a random condition of our hearts. And so there seems to be some collateral damage in this story as the word is sown and people fall away. And oh, by the way, I've seen birds picking seeds out of good soil.
Yeah. And I've seen plants grow on rocky ground.
We're going to get there, right? So is there... I'm sorry.
I just wanted to say something about the birds.
Hold on a second.
Well, okay.
She's coming.
Before we go on about the birds, I don't think the birds are the evil ones. They're just doing their thing. I think the real evil here is that guy who came in and tried to destroy the crop. Just the birds.
So to you and to Mark, my third question, is there grace for the seed that the birds eat? Right? Is there grace for the seeds that spring up in rocky soil and don't make it? Is there grace for the seeds that are in the thorns? I think God intends the answer to that to be yes. And I think that's, again, not the point of this parable. The point of the parable is don't be a thorn. But I think when we look at the parable, we can see, as you all have, you know, there's not going to be anything revealing about this other than the fact that I think we agree on a lot of things here. But we can see that at some times we feel that we're growing in rocky soil. And sometimes we feel that we're growing among the thorns. That should probably be a daily revelation for us that there are thorns. The danger of this, though, I mean, one of the things I want to talk about is this is a dangerous parable from the point of the temptation to judge, from the point of being able to feel like, well, I'm a seed in good soil. I'm one of the ones that God wants to be in the harvest, that he set me up to be in the harvest. There's that temptation That's not a bad thing to think. But the temptation to think the other way is those other people. They're the ones on rocky ground. They're the ones that aren't going to be harvested. That's what I find dangerous about this parable. So as I said, I'm not going to answer all these questions, and I have more questions on the soil. I mean, if we are the soil, then we don't actually get harvested, so I'm kind of confused by that. So we have to be the seed, I think. Otherwise, we're not going to heaven. So just sort of a, you know, if you dig into this thing, well, if we're the soils, if our hearts are the soil, I think we have to be the seed at least some of the time. Now, let's talk about seeds. Didn't you sow good seed? Now, in 2023, if I go down to the store and I buy Scott's grass seed and I buy Kentucky Blue, I'm going to find out that it's 99% pure and that 1% of it is other stuff. And 99% of the other stuff is other grasses, so fescue and other grasses. But 1% of that 1% is wheat. And this is 2023. What do you think the quality of the seed was, good seed or bad seed, 2,000 years ago, when they're harvesting the grain and they're threshing it on the threshing floor and they're gathering it up and sweeping it up? And my guess is there was probably more bad seed than 0.1%. So I wonder about this good seed, bad seed business. And I wonder if some of the bad seed just doesn't occur naturally. Get back to the natural way of things, right? I mean, weeds are everywhere. They're just everywhere. No matter how hard we try, in our gardens, in our lawns, you just can't get rid of them all, right? The wind brings them, the birds bring them. They're everywhere. They're just everywhere. So it's hard for us to avoid living among the thorns. Yes, Winnell. Yeah, what's a weed, right? That's a great question.
Some of my neighbors think that clover in their lawn is a weed. I think it's a gift because it's fertilizing the soil without having to add chemical fertilizer.
Yeah, but it's not grass.
Weed is in the mind of the beholder.
Well, maybe that's true.
A weed, I think, is defined as a plant that's growing somewhere that a human doesn't want it to grow.
That's an interesting definition. So a weed is a plant that's growing where we don't want it.
Where some person doesn't.
Where we don't want it. Individually, we. That's a great definition. And let's face it, right? Some of the most tenacious plants in nature are what we would call weeds, right? In several of the translations, these weeds are called thistles, and everyone knows that thistles are amazingly tenacious, right? You pull them up, and they're root propagators. And so you pull one up, and there's a little bit of root left. It's back the next day. But it's also spreading underground where you can't see it. And so they're pretty tenacious. I have to admit, I've always been enthralled by the tenacity of plants. And I've been an outdoorsman, I've traveled the wilderness of this country, and everywhere I go, I take pictures of the tenacity of plants because I self-identify with that. As some of you said, I see myself as not just a seed on the rocky soil, but a seed on the rocky soil with some thorns around it, and yet, here I am, I'm still in church. Yes.
Because the birds swoop in, eat up those seeds, deposit them other places, perhaps places where the soil is more accommodating to them. So they have another chance to flourish.
You're right. The seeds are, so again, when you get into this parable, it's not an everything parable. It doesn't have answers for everything. There's all kinds of things that you can find in here, and that's great, right? The depth of this parable, there's all kinds of things. So you're right. The birds pick up the seeds, and their digestive system breaks down the outer coating of the seed, and that's what they thrive on. But the germ of the seed is planted someplace else. That's how the weeds get in your garden. Go ahead.
So this is all fascinating, but I can't picture myself as a soil or a seed or a weed or a bird or a... I can picture myself as the sower, the person who's throwing out the seeds. And so I try to be, well, I am, obnoxiously positive, okay? And I know. So if I go to Dunkin' Donuts, I'm the guy who's going to hold the door. I'm the guy who's going to say hello to everybody, whether I know them or not. And generally, I don't. But I try to, you know, put on a happy face, whether I'm feeling good or not. I try. All right? So some of those smiles, okay, are going to land in a place where maybe they will help other people smile. Some of those smiles, some of those, you know, thank you very much, some of those things are going to just, the person is too self-absorbed in what he's doing, which isn't necessarily his or her fault. It is just that there's an errand to be done, and that's what the focus is. Okay, so you're not always going to be successful, but I think of myself as the sower, because that's what I have some control over. And, you know, now I... doesn't make any sense for me to say hello to the driveway. I say hello to somebody that it might make a difference to. Eh.
Good. We can go here, but I have only a few minutes to wrap up, so I... Are you sure? Okay. All right, so I wanted to point out there's another garden. There's another sower, there's another set of weeds, there's another set of seeds, way back in the beginning. In this garden, the weeds enter the garden, some plants are overcome by the weeds, the gardener pulls those plants out of the garden and plants them outside the garden, fertilizes them, and asks them to grow and multiply. This is a different outcome than the outcome that we have in the New Testament. This is the outcome of the gardener maybe kind of acting like a bird, kind of giving us a second chance. There's some parallels here, a lot of parallels. There's a sower, there's a garden, there's seeds, there's weeds. And at the end, there's grace. So these are my conclusions. And I think they're not different from many of yours. I just want to say that the point here is for each of us to see ourselves in the parable in some way, and not for all of us to see ourselves as the same way I do or the same way that Francis does, but find our place and then learn from it. So here's my conclusions. The will to grow is insurmountable. Plants everywhere you look. They grow and they thrive in some of the most awful conditions and some of the worst places. And I think God intends, by sowing the seed everywhere for us, wherever we're sown, to use that insurmountable will to grow and to thrive and to bring forth fruit. And so my concluding slide here is of my experience as a sower, my experience of seeds, and my experience of soil. So some of you know I've been a scout leader most of my life, and so I find that to be one of my opportunities to be the soil. I'm not the sower because I'm not everybody's parent, but I am the place where youth can fertilize, can gain strength, can gain information and knowledge. These seeds pictures are how I feel about myself. Rocky soil, thorns. I think you all have this idea that we're not all planted in the good soil. In fact, I think probably no one is really planted in the really good soil. Some people are more good soil than others. I think we're that. But the beauty of these plants that can grow in the most remote, rocky, thorny conditions is something that I think we need to embrace that and see the beauty of it and understand that this is a natural occurrence, and it's part of God's will for us to be that kind of seed, that kind of plant. And of course, as a sower, these are my children. And whether we have natural-born children or we have children that we've adopted or cared for or in some other way, we are all sowers. Whether we sow at Dunkin' Donuts, because our children grow up, and at some point in time, that's not the only place where we're sowing, right? So at that, I am concluded with my ideas about the parable of the sower, and I would invite, if you have a question, or anyone who has a question or a comment, we have just a few minutes.
Well, I've changed my mind again, but when we started out today, I was thinking of myself as the soil. My soul is the soil, and I want my soul to be as open and receptive as possible. And for me, the problem is that I put up a lot of barriers. All my personality defects shut things out, and I want to be as open as possible. But being as open as possible means that opens the way for not only the good seed but the bad seed. And that's where I need a spiritual life, because I need help in discerning which seed I want, which seed will actually grow. If I am open to everything, I want the good seed to grow. But anyway, that's what I was thinking.
Thank you.
We have time for one more question or thought.
It's not really a question, but something I thought about as you were going on in your last couple slides here and about things growing in incredibly, you know, rocky places, is that God doesn't prejudge how that soil is going to grow in us. He sows everywhere, right? So when somebody made the comment about if you're really trying to maximize yield, you put the best seed in the best soil. But God doesn't do that. God puts the soil everywhere, gives everyone a chance, and it's up to us maybe to help nurture the soil in people who have more rocks in their dirt than us, you know. But God is not prejudging. God is planting that soil in all, in that seed in all the different soils. That word is available for everyone, and in some places it just might need a little more nurture. So.
All right.
Well, that's a lovely note to conclude on. Thank you, John. Keith, thank you so much for leading us today. This was really thought-provoking, and we appreciate
it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Please come back next week. We have a little bit of a change in schedule. Thais Carter will be leading us. Thais, which parable will you be teaching on?
The workers in the vineyard.
So please come back next week to hear from Thais, and thank you for being here today.
What's that?
I